This is KDLL, 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. You're tuned in to the Kenai Conversation. I'm Hunter Morrison. On this week's Kenai Conversation, we're joined by Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor Peter Machicki. He is the president of the Managing Board of Directors for the Cook Inlet Harbor Safety Committee. We're also joined by Captain Paul Mailer, chairman of the Cook Inlet Harbor Safety Committee. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Perfect. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Appreciate it, Hunter.
And, you know, first things first, before we sort of hop into the Cook Inlet Harbor Safety Committee, I'm curious on each of, you know, you two and sort of your maritime endeavors. Paul, if you want to go first.
Sure. So, graduated from the Maritime Academy a few years ago, let's say that. And then I went into the Coast Guard and I served Mass Maritime Academy, graduated 1990. Served 25 plus years in the Coast Guard, retired in Alaska as the sector commander, captain of the port for Western Alaska in the Arctic. So my greatest honor, it was just a tremendous job and led an incredible group of men and women to do really some of the best work in the Coast Guard up here, and really proud of that. Took about a month off and then went to work for Tesoro, now Marathon, as their port captain, managing all marine operations for Alaska, and kind of stayed in that field. My wife and I really fell in love with Alaska and wanted to stay in the community, and I looked for a position that I could stay involved in the environment and really have an impact, and I found the perfect job for that, and really working with the tanker industry and harbor safety certainly fit right in, and love what we're doing.
Sweet. And Peter, fill me in on your maritime endeavors.
Yeah, thank you. As you know, maybe you don't know, but I ran the LNG facility and marine terminal for many years, so was tied in with these guys for a very long time professionally. Also been about the time you were graduating from Mass Maritime Academy is when I purchased my commercial fishing boat in Cook Inlet, so it's my 34th season, and obviously as a recreational boater here, intimately am aware of the sectors that are involved with this amazingly dynamic waterway that we call Cook Inlet. So when we started forming things together, they contacted me, and I was all in. Of course, you were still captain of the port at the time. Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit about the Coast Guard's involvement. This is really a Coast Guard process, so big deal to have a captain of the port involved, and a big deal to have a former captain of the port involved right now, and it gives us a lot of credibility in our committee.
Gotcha. And, you know, we'll sort of hop right into it. I'll throw the question to you first, and Paul, if you'd like to chime in. You know, what is the Cook Inlet Harbor Safety Committee?
Well, marine transportation is a national priority, and the Coast Guard obviously plays a critical role in ensuring the protection of those waterways. So around 2000, they formalized the guidelines to forming a Marine Harbor Safety Committee. And a lot of it was modeled off of some of the most busy, like the Port of New York and New Jersey. It deals with harbor safety, navigation, and operations committees that they had for decades. So they kind of modeled it off of that. And the Coast Guard has been very involved. It's how we went without it for so many years in Cook Inlet is actually fascinating. If you think about it, Hunter, I mean, everything that happens in our community, all of our commerce is associated with the marine environment, right? We have even the railroad. The goods that travel on the railroad typically are first handled in a marine environment. But when you think about our container ships that come in to Anchorage, and you think about cruise ships that occur, all the oil field activity, the recreational activity on the water, and the commercial fisheries, there's a lot going on. And we can get in the details of what we look at as a marine, in the marine environment with our Harbor Safety Committee as we continue.
Yeah, Hunter, You know, I want to give credit to CERCAC. So the Cook Inlet Regional Citizens Advisory Council did a study. And as a result of that risk assessment they did, one of the recommendations was creating a harbor safety committee. And at that point, I, as Peter said, I was the captain of the port. And that was really the catalyst to, with that recommendation, go back as the federal person and say, let's look into this and let's see how we can form this group. And we had a work group come together. Peter was part of that. And that leadership team came up on researching other harbor safety committees and what it would look like. And in 2015, we actually kicked off the Cook Inlet Harbor Safety Committee, which is, to my knowledge, the first harbor safety committee in the state of Alaska, and certainly one of the largest geographically in the country. We could have done it just Anchorage or, you know, other places, but we took in the whole Cook Inlet to invest and involve everyone involved in shipping up here. So pretty exciting the way we did it. It's very unique. Most harbor safety committees are very specific for their little port. We involve multiple ports and a vast geographic area and bring everyone together for common interest. And it's really exciting, and we've been able to share that with other ports and how we've done it. So that's been a lot of fun. Here we are, this little town up in Alaska, sharing with San Francisco and other big ports on how we do it and how we do manage such a vast geographical area and the impact of bringing everyone together. So it's a great example of how that can work, and folks should be really proud of it.
And Peter talked about it a little bit, but I'm curious on your thoughts, if you'd like to elaborate sort of why a committee like this is needed here in the community.
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, as Peter said, you know, it's surprising we never had it. So ultimately, the captain of the port for the Coast Guard is going to drive federal regulatory enforcement and trying to ensure everything is done safely on our waterways. But a harbor safety committee is really, it's a committee of users of the waterway that serves as an advisor to the captain of the port in making any of these big decisions. So as the captain of the port, I had the ability to reach out if I was facing a decision that had to come and it was going to be a long-term impact, be able to reach out to a harbor safety committee that I previously never had and say, here's the issue. Here's one of our challenges. And I need, you know, to hear from you on how this would be best to regulate. Before you come out with a decision that could impact people's careers and their livelihoods, hear from them. You know, how is this going to work? Would this be detrimental? You think it's a good idea? How should we do it a little bit different? And then you come up with these best practices and how we can do what we're going to do. And probably one of the biggest impacts that we've jumped right in is ice. So of course, Cook Inlet, one of our greatest challenges is ice and moving ships in ice and still continuing commerce, which is critical year round in a bad ice year. How are we going to do this safely? And we had Coast Guard had ice guidelines and ice rules for a while. We changed it to ice guidelines, and involving the Harbor Safety Committee, they took over as drafting these and managing them and making any changes as necessary and then submitting that to the Coast Guard for their signature and approval. But it's all based on this small committee's input and listening to the users. And then we come up with a list of a process of a best practice and how to operate in the ice that we're going to have. And it really is a great model and example of how a small committee can come together of the users and listen to each other. And it impacts all of us in a certain way, the ice. And we're able to, every year we do this and we come together and give it back to the Coast Guard, our recommendations. And the Coast Guard captain will sign those to set an example for every vessel coming in and what we're going to do that year. So that's been something we're really proud of and had a big impact on.
Gotcha. And we'll talk a bit more about the committee itself here in a few minutes. But did you mention that it was established because of a recommendation from the Cook Inlet Marine Risk Assessment? Is that right?
The Cook Inlet Regional Citizens Advisory Council, CERCAC, had a risk assessment they did. And one of the recommendations as a result of that risk assessment was the formation of a harbor safety committee that was lacking in our area. And that was the driver to give the Coast Guard captain of the port, me at the time, the ability to say, let's look into this, because now I have an important council making that recommendation after a very thorough risk assessment of what we're doing. So it was certainly in our best interest, and the folks just stepped right up, like Mayor Michicki, and we formed it.
And for those who maybe aren't familiar, could we backtrack and I guess first of all explain what a risk assessment is, and then also like what CERCPAC, who they are, kind of tell me about them a little bit more.
Yeah, CERCAC, Cook Inlet Regional Citizens Advisory Council, was formed by the OPA 90 legislation after the Exxon Valdez oil spill, and partially funded that way as well, primarily funded that way as well. And essentially, they're a watchdog for, I would say, hydrocarbon-related impacts on the waterway. So there's also one in Prince William Sound and one here, and they were... their role was imperative to the formation of the committee. I mean, why CERCAC is important is it is stakeholder driven, and why the Cook Inlet Harbor Safety Committee, and why that logic of how safety committees are formed is successful is because of that maritime stakeholder input. So we cast a wide net. Instead of the government, the Coast Guard in this case, if they didn't have a relationship with recreational boaters or some other group, the way that we form this committee literally cast a wide net to include everyone from environmental groups to the larger operators to commercial fishing, cruise ship operators, dry cargo ship operators. And if you look at the list of members of our committee, you'll see that we left no one out of providing guidance on how the Coast Guard is going to, I don't even want to say regulate, how they provide best practices for how to keep everyone safe in this extremely diverse, extremely dynamic waterway. So I am glad you brought that up, Captain Mailer. But, you know, a lot of those that are dealing with interactions between mariners are not dealing with 9-knot currents. And they're certainly not dealing with 9-knot currents with 3 feet of ice running around at that same speed for a large part of the year. So we have some very unique challenges here, and this group has worked very well together. A lot of our members don't operate in the winter. When you get to the recreational boaters and the guides and the commercial fishing operations, particularly in the northern inlet, they don't operate. You're just largely coming to tanker traffic and cargo traffic. But the safety of this amazing waterway is it's imperative that we understand what everyone's facing. And that could be as minor an incident as when commercial fishermen, drifters are have their gear in the water, those interactions with guide boats and recreational boaters that have an anchor in the water. We can't move our gear. We have to work out ways for everyone to be safe while they're stationary. We're not. And we have relatively immovable gear. So there are little things like that. And of course, it hits the much larger impacts of the Port of Alaska, Port of Homer, Port McKenzie, and those larger vessels, and sometimes very large vessels that frequent those terminals as well.
Okay, gotcha. And can we talk about the, you know, some of the entities that are, you know, made up of the Cook Inlet Harbor Safety Committee, those organizations?
Certainly. So the managing board of directors, and I've been the president since the inception because I keep missing those meetings where they elect those people. But Captain Ron Ward's vice president, Mike Munger's secretary treasurer from CERCAC. Captain Ron Ward is a Marine pilot, Southwest Pilots Association. I think that's the formal name. Captain Mailer, of course, as the Harbor Safety Committee chairman of the working group, if you will, the guys that do all the work. We just and we meet more frequently as a managing board of directors. The Harbor Safety Committee meets generally twice a year, and then they break off for the different committees. And then Captain Jeff Brew, who is a member of the managing board of directors, and he is with Marathon. And then you drop down into the different, like commercial fishing, Dave Martin and Captain Eric Velsko. They are involved with USEDA and other groups, cruise ship operators, dry cargo ship operators. You'll see these names, like environmentalists Rachel Lord and Suzanne Speckman. They've been involved with Cook Inlet Keeper and other groups. The Harbor Tug, Captain Brad Croon, he's with
Centerline.
Yeah, Centerline. So all of these logos you see in the inlet are concerned with the safety and operational efficiency of their individual organizations, but they're also the experts. So you'll see folks from Hillcorp and the ports, the various ports, recreational boaters is Garrett St. Clair, CISPRI, the Cook Inlet Spill Prevention and Response Organization, CEO Todd Paxton holds one of the seats. So the folks that are on the seats are the people that are either on the water or managing what happens on the water on a regular basis.
Okay, gotcha. And, you know, these groups have sort of differing interests, you know, from, commercial, from oil to like, you know, just other groups of varying interests. You know, what would you say is the importance of, having different representatives of different organizations with different interests be sort of a part of this group?
It's everything. It is the only, I mean, it's why we exist and it's why it's effective. At our meetings, people are talking about things that hadn't been discussed in a formal setting before. The minutes weren't taken. They didn't come to agreement on how to solve various issues. And now that forum exists and it's maritime stakeholder driven. I would say that the Coast Guard kind of takes a back seat to the process. I mean, they're always at the meetings. And they discuss other, like they've put on presentations about maritime cybersecurity and things like that. So we have some great presenters on things that maybe only affect the larger operators. But it is stakeholder driven and stakeholder, the problems are stakeholder solved. And that really didn't exist before until things really came to a head. Sometimes people would verbally duke it out in a forum that really didn't result in a solution. And today we have that forum and it's very successful.
I think it's a great model too. It gives the small person a voice, right? Instead of just listening to big shipping, it gives the recreational boater just an equal voice as anyone else, some of the bigger shippers. And I think that's a really important part of it. They come to the table with their concerns and their interest and we're able to listen to them at a very, you know, intimate forum and say, hey, this is my concern on that idea. This is why it will or will not work for me. And this is the impact this decision would have on us. And that's really a strength of getting this committee together and having that diverse background is hearing from the mom and pop organizations to the major big corporations sitting around and talking about decisions and what the risks are and how we're going to manage and make a recommendation. We have one of the things we've done very well and we're proud of is a safety plan. So we now have on our website, a safety plan that was put together by all the users and representatives from the different user groups. And this goes in and anyone can read it. I haven't been in Cook Inlet and how do I know where to go and what to do and what an emergency, what will happen? You can go right on here. And this is input from all the experience that's out there. And we've created a safety plan that's posted and it's updated every year on what we can do. And first time callers or even the experienced people can say, you know what? I haven't really looked into that, but what is on that safety plan? Let's take a look. And, you know, traffic management and communications, there's going to be dead spots out there. Where are the bad spots? And what do I do in this area? And it's all gathered in there, a fire plan. You know, if there is a fire, what do you do? Who do you call? So if I need support for whatever reason, here's a plan that it's all been captured. And it's one resource on there. So great collaboration from the users to come together and create this and post it and keep it available for the users and the public to go on and say, that's a really interesting resource that I never knew existed. And that's right posted right on our website for the Harbor Safety Committee.
And could you elaborate on what this safety plan might entail a little bit more?
Sure. So it was developed and maintained Harbor Safety Plan. It's one of the responsibilities of the Harbor Safety Committee, right? So in that they address issues like navigation. If there's, what the different buoys and markers and lights and what the boater has to be aware of, particularly people that haven't done it. We have pilots and they are aware of all that. They have to as part of their job. But a recreational boater or a fisherman that, you know, they're only there a couple times a year and we're going to go out and take the family out. And what's out there? What should I be aware of and be concerned with? You can go in there and see navigation issues, vessel traffic management. As Peter was saying, you know, the tankers and the container ships, they have a very specific route they're going to take. And they're, even their times and when they're going to go is mostly generally known. And how do they know when that's going to be and where they should transit and where they should be and trying to avoid? They have a lot more flexibility in what they can do that with the larger ships. Some of the fishing vessels are even less able to maneuver and for them to know where those fishing areas are and what times of year they're going to be there. So awareness and training is one of the strengths of that. And emergency response. If something, God forbid, does happen while they're out there, what do you do? Who do you call? What are my options? And, you know, radio phone numbers and you know, VHF channels and what should I have on my boat before I get underway? And all this is captured in there. And again, the beauty of it, it's updated. You know, we not only post it there and it's there and it's done. Every year we go back and look at it and listen. What did we learn from the last year? Keep this up to date and it's there. And it's a resource for the public to tap into as our harbor safety plan. And that's a big, I think, something we're very proud of and one of the more important documents we produce as the committee.
I see. Now, you know, this committee has, like we talked about a couple of minutes ago, different groups with different interests. Does that make coming to decisions, coming to solutions a bit more challenging?
It can, certainly. I think, you know, I learned from Tom Ridge, the first Secretary of Homeland Security when I worked for him at DHS. He had a plaque when we got in. Check your egos at the door. We were all the best at what we did when he brought that team together, but we had to work towards a common goal. And I stole that idea kind of for our approach. So, you don't want the big guys kind of, you know, it's where we bring the most money in. We're going to listen to everyone. And as the chair, I really do want to hear from the small mom and pops that are only, you know, I don't want them to ever feel that their opinion is not important and isn't valued. And this is a wonderful environment to really bring that together. So could it happen? It certainly could. But I think there's a lot of mutual respect in this committee for trying to be out there on our waterways and be able to do it and share with it, do it safely. So pretty proud of how that's worked and the folks that have been there. Certainly, Hunter, I can see it could happen, but I can tell you, and Mayor, I don't know of any example where it's really been difficult to come up with a decision where we had a lot of dissent from one group or another. I think once they hear a different side, we could come to a common decision.
Yeah, I won't disagree with you. The mariners checking their egos at the door is not possible. That's just that's not a real thing. But the format of this group, and I didn't mention this, so we're essentially there to advise the agencies on the best policy forward. What works about this is there are a lot of nice community groups that really don't have a tool to move policy forward. They come to a decision and they might know someone or a policymaker or a lawmaker that can, an elected official that can make something happen, but the tools are not in the room. At each of our meetings, we have ex officio folks, but the only voters are the stakeholders. So they vote, and there's discussion that sometimes is spirited. I hope there is on any effective groups. There has to be, right? But in the room is the Army Corps of Engineers, several members of the Coast Guard, including the captain of the port, NOAA, Department of Defense, the Alaska Marine Exchange, Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, Alaska DOT, fire personnel. What's interesting here is in many organizations I've belonged with or belonged to through the years, the environmentalists kind of stand out. They're usually on the other side of an issue. In this case, that hasn't been the case. Why? I mean, we talked about CERCAC. That's what they're focused on. Fish are life for us. Everyone in that room is also a sport fisherman. They also fill their freezers. They also care about fish. So there really hasn't been this outstanding environmental piece because everyone's focused on the same thing. And it's the ex officio folks, all the agency folks don't vote. But the discussion has been very influential on making better decisions because every little, every man or woman that's a part of one of these user groups, whether they're the recreational boaters or the person operating the largest tanker in the inlet, there's been a lot of, it's been a pretty unified team. In fact, often some of the discussion is two individuals from a similar user group who disagree about a particular operation, but instead of a traditional vote that's close, I would say the group largely operates on consensus because we get to the point of where most votes are relatively unanimous.
Agreed. And I've had the fortunate opportunity to work with many harbor safety committees in my role as in the Coast Guard over the years, and I think the people of Alaska and this community should be really proud of what they have here. And I'm proud to watch the community come together in some of these decisions. And I haven't seen a lot of infighting and challenges from the small guy not being able to voice their concern. As Peter said, some of the environmental groups, they hear us. And I think the ability to communicate and share your concerns and what's going on and respect each other's interest. And there's something special about Alaskans and working up here and appreciating what we have and trying to keep it safe. I mean, one of the key areas we look at is it's all oil spills and response and what will we do, right? And that's part of the role of the Harbor Safety Committee, looking at the plans and how can we support it and what would this be? But it's beyond that. It's beyond, it's trying to prevent that. How do we communicate early on risk and what we're doing? So a lot of harbor safety committees are very focused on response and an oil spill. We've gone back and how do we work together to try and prevent this? We still work on our response plan. It's important to us. And I'm responsible as the chair to make sure we do that and push that out. But one of the things I've really tried to instill and bring to this group, going back to the respect piece, is every meeting I have two different groups speak with a very important goal, and that's awareness of each other, right? So every individual that's on this committee will have an opportunity to present to the whole committee on what they do, what their organization is, how they're structured, and just share and make everyone aware of, I'm a commercial fisherman, and here's how this works and what we do and how difficult it is or how exciting it is or what my challenges are. And I think that's important for everyone to hear. And I'm a rec boater guy, and here's what I do. I go out with my family and what we do. But I want everyone to come to the table and be able to express, you know, if it's 10 minutes or 15 minutes or if you need an hour to talk about what you do, the floor is yours. And I think that has been also very unique to us, but it has brought about a better increased awareness of who makes up this committee.
And Paul, one thing that you briefly touched on and we've talked about a little bit during this conversation is I'm curious on your thoughts. How might this Harbor Safety Committee differ from, you know, others around the country?
Well, there are a couple of big differences. The area is hugely different. We try to move our meetings around. So we'll be in Homer one time for a meeting. We'll be in Kenai, Soldotna. Our next meeting is going to be in Anchorage. That in itself is unique. Most places I've seen and most Harbor Safety Committees that I'm aware of in the lower 48 are for a specific port, and that's what they represent. So the diversity and the sheer size of the area that we represent is unique. I think the diverse interest that we bring together for here, for example, the ice work I talked about, or the currents we have to deal with, that in itself is very unique to Cook Inlet, and how do we, you know, they might not operate in the winter, the pleasure boaters, but, you know, listen to them because there's a lot of experience and they've been here a while and they know what they're going on. And listen to the pilots and hear that kind of input. I've been humbled by some of the folks I wouldn't have even thought of asking about where's the challenge here? How do we improve our plan for this, you know, these ICE guidelines. And I've heard from people I would never have thought of asking about it, what they would recommend and where they see as a challenge. And this is such an interesting community of Mariner experienced people that have grown up on the water and used Cook Inlet, and their dad took them out as a kid, and they've seen things and they've learned things about how to operate on Cook Inlet. And that's what makes this place really unique and special. And getting them together to listen to them and share has been our strength.
If you're just tuning in to the Kenai Conversation, we're chatting with Paul Mailer and Peter Machicki. They are with the Cook Inlet Harbor Safety Committee, a forum that aims to enhance marine safety and environmental stewardship through collaboration. You know, this committee is pretty well established. It's been around for about a decade now, and you guys have a lot of different organizations that represent this. But are you all looking to expand to other organizations, other groups, anytime in the near future? And what might that look like?
We're always open to adding a seat if someone is more interested. I mean, in our bylaws right now, we feel like we already have done that exercise to make sure that no one is left out. We have 20 primary seats and an alternate for each. And that does reflect Cook Inlet's unique and diversified user groups. But where if someone felt that we're missing a group, we would like for them to contact us. They can contact me. I can run it through the committee process. They can contact Captain Mailer. We're always open to those considerations. And you know, there's a couple things, and Captain Mailer said it well, but Alaskans are different anyway. Unless you're hyper-focused on, I did an interview today, I told you, Hunter, with New York Times Tokyo about the AKLNG project, and they asked about, you know, was there a partisan divide, and Alaskans are different, and the way I describe it, it's a place where Democrats carry guns and Republicans smoke weed, right? I mean, we don't focus on the same things other places do. When we're focused on things like the well-being of our water quality and fish, fish don't care if there's a DRR next to your name, right? They just don't. And that's how this group operates. I mean, I don't even know what the party of the people in this group is. And I only bring up party because it's often the kind of thing that divides people. This group's pretty unified. I mean, we're focused on the safety of this environment and the safety of the people that operate on this waterway. And one thing Captain Mailer didn't bring up why it's so important that we move around is if you dissect Cook Inlet in, I'd say, 25-mile increments, the activities in that waterway and the risks associated with tidal current and ice change dramatically every 30 miles. So in the lower inlet, you have pot fisheries that we don't have up here. You have, you know, people that are still crabbing and a lot more seasonal activity. Very little bit of an ice risk, if any at all. You have tankers that go in to anchor in Ketchumak Bay behind the spit, if you will. As you move up, the activity changes. And I use 30-mile increments because I think about what happens, you know, south of Anchor Point, what happens between Anchor Point and Clam Gulch, what happens north of Clam Gulch to the Forelands, the current and tidal risks that happen as the Cook Inlet narrows down. Not only does the icing change, but the speed of the currents changes dramatically, and the activity becomes larger and more industrial, if you will, going north. You've got platforms kind of in the way as you get north of the Forelands. So the diversity of what mariners experience is why we have to be so active in those other communities, because just the it's all different. It all changes. It's very diverse, very dynamic. It's an amazing body of water with a lot of competing interests that occur, and all of them are important to all of us.
I see. Now, I'm curious, are there any tribal groups or Alaska Native groups that are a part of this committee?
There has certainly been tribal members because they're members of the various groups that we represent, but there is not a tribal seat specifically, no.
Okay, gotcha. Now, you know, one of the according to the website and what the Harbor Safety website and what each of you have sort of touched on is, you know, one of its missions, the Harbor Safety Committee, is to enhance marine safety. I guess I'm curious on each of your thoughts. What are some of the maybe biggest safety concerns in Cook Inlet that, you know, people should keep in mind?
That's a great question. So I think, obviously, we have seasons that are so drastically different. In the summer, with the fishing that's going on, it's critical that we communicate to each other on what our operations are, getting on the radio, being able to communicate on, you know, here's the areas that we're going to be fishing, when we're going to be fishing, when the bigger ships are going to be coming through. That's certainly a challenge, and that all works from open comms, of just sharing that information. And we can time that. If the pilots are aware when there's going to be a fishery, where there's an opening, when there's a closure, we can work around trying to avoid that specific area so to mitigate that risk. In the winter, that's really, you know, as Peter said, we don't necessarily have a lot of users on the waterway in the winter, but it really is, it's a challenge. And that is where this, you know, the ICE guidelines and the ICE rules come into effect and how we work together and come up with that recommendation. And, you know, I see two separate, complete, distinct risks in the season we're going to operate in.
Okay, gotcha. Peter, is there anything else you'd like to add on to that effect?
No, I think that covers it. I mean, we've covered everything from tsunami risks and other risks to the waterway to cybersecurity. We're often focused on hydrocarbon transportation safety, which is something that every user group focuses on. We know what happened in 1989, and that we never want that to happen here at any scale. So, you know, what we try to do is get in front of potential safety issues. Paul talked about that. I mean, we just finished up an amazing season in the commercial fishery. We've got 440 people towing something 9 to 1,200 feet long that's immovable when it's in the water. And the interactions have been reduced over the year. We've got technology improvements and things like that, and they're more aware. We used to have a lot more drift gear, large vessel interactions, and those aren't good. I mean, they've always turned out okay. Generally, it results in new gear for the drift fishermen, but that is not an interaction that anyone wants to occur. We've had some fixed guide drift boat interactions. There are things that can happen all the time. What I'd like for us to get more involved in, and we've started additional outreach recently to so that everyone out there recognizes that we exist and we're willing to deal with these issues. We are so blessed with the absence of the loss of life that can occur in Cook Inlet. And if you think about it, the awareness of a dentist from Anchorage that can go buy a $500,000 boat that has no idea what's going to happen when the tide changes, right? I mean, they have no idea what can happen if your anchor line gets caught in a prop when you have a large exchange of tide, you know, second largest in the world. Those things can end up very badly. We've seen some of it. We had some of it very recently. But what can occur is extraordinary and potentially disastrous. And I think we need to take a larger role on just the what to look for as a recreational boater in Cook Inlet kind of publication. We've been very focused on solving problems with the different user groups. And I think our next stage is that just publications and outreach to folks that just aren't as experienced with the risks that are out there. I mean, you don't need a license to go out there in a brand new boat, and you may not have any experience. But I will tell you, as a kid raised in Florida, that's been on the water in both places his whole life. I've been here for how many years? 40, 82, 44 years. The dynamics of Cook Inlet are very different and very dangerous. And a small mistake in a boat that doesn't have a lot of options could be could result in a tragic ending. And I think there's not really someone filling that role. We do our best. I think it's a place we can focus on the future, on really having people think about everything that can occur. There are temporary hazards. There are project hazards. If AKLNG goes through, that will be a kind of a new one. That the last time we've seen that kind of activity was in the 60s, and all these pipelines are being laid and all these platforms are being set. But there are shoals that people are unaware of. We have better electronics now that didn't exist in the old days, but in some ways that makes people take things for granted and not be as aware while out in a very challenging marine environment. You know, we had a 15 knot wind going with the current. No big deal. People are out in a small boat trolling for kings. That tidal direction changes, and suddenly you've got as much as a 25 knot wind, depending on the tidal range, that changes the water conditions immediately. And people are not always aware and prepared for that, especially newer boaters that have not grown up on Cook Inlet. So I think there's always room for improvement, and I think that may be a path that we take in the future on just helping make people more aware of those risks.
Okay, gotcha. And, you know, another thing, another mission of the Cook Inlet Harbor Safety Community is to promote, you know, environmental stewardship through collaboration. And I'm curious, I'll throw the question to Paul first, and Peter, if you'd like to chime in. You know, I guess what are some top environmental concerns that maybe folks might be looking to address?
Of course, environmental impact. I go back to prevention, right? Instead of a response leg, which we certainly have a plan and we exercise and discuss, but how do we prevent these? And, you know, one of the things for this committee is educate and cross-train each other. I'll go back a little bit. There's a lot of talent here. So environmental response, we have a plan for salvage. We have a plan for firefighting. We have a plan for environmental. And these are all we bring together. There's a tremendous talent out there that I don't even think I recognized until we start to get folks together on these smaller subcommittees. For example, the first one that comes to mind is like Todd Duke with Resolve. So he was key to helping us write our salvage plan. Again, going back to environmental, if there is a response and we do have a release, how do we get this vessel secure and safe and get this out of the waterway in a safe manner? So how do you write a salvage plan? What does this look like? Well, we have Todd on this subcommittee. It turns out, you know, after the Dolly incident down in Baltimore, probably one of the highest profile marine accidents and incidents we've had in many years, you know, our person here in Cook Inlet, they fly him down to manage the environmental response removal of all the hazmat for that response. So you look at that, what we have here in the inlet, when we're coming up with a plan on how to do this, and who do we have as a resident expert to tap into? There's a tremendous amount of talent that we brought together in this this committee. And Todd's just one example of many, but something I could brag on, that we have folks like that come together and are able to help us come up with a really valuable and very unique plan, going back to prevention. We certainly have to have a plan for response, and that's where people like Todd come in, and how we're going to remove a vessel and get the hazmat off of vessels if there is an incident. And that's critical that we do it. But we really do try very hard to work to prevent that, and how do we do that? So yeah,
gotcha. Peter, is there anything you'd like to add to that effect?
Yes, I you know, first of all, when they were formulated, and even recent publications by the Coast Guard continuously reminds us, and I'm going to read a little bit if you don't mind, but it this is from HSE membership inclusivity. HSEs are also at health harbor safety committees are also at risk. Their commitment to transparency and establishing a common understanding of the issues wanes. This risk can be combated by ensuring all port stakeholders have an equal voice in the discussion. Captain of the port must persuade the HSC to remain open to all interested port stakeholders and take an active role in inviting port stakeholders to attend and participate. And we must also notice when gaps in key local voices exist within their HSC and play a role in recruiting participants to cultivate the team the port needs. We've done that. We always remain open. But I can tell you, if we decide that suddenly an evil group takes over the HSC and decides we're not going to talk about environmental concerns, I'm not sure that Vinny Catalano or Shaylin Cochran or Mike Munger are going to agree to that. We also have members of Cook Inlet Keeper that are engaged. So the very formation and the very structure of this committee, some are going to be more focused on safety, some are going to be more focused on environmental stewardship, but we have a team that's diversified enough to make sure we don't lose focus on any of those key issues.
I think one, I love the environmental question, and it's a real passion for me, and you're going to hear it come out, right? So if there is a response in Cook Inlet, and there is a unified command set up, and the Coast Guard is running a response. One of the areas that makes this unique is you're now a voice for the community. And as the captain of the port, he's going to ask for and listen to the Harbor Safety Committee's recommendations on issues. That's an important tool for him or her to consider in making the decisions that have to happen. And so, if there was a response and we had to come together, the committee comes together in an emergency meeting and we, you know, discuss what the concerns are, what's happening, and kind of come up with a recommendation for the leadership in the unified command. And genuinely, this is important to them and they're going to listen to us. And we do have a very loud voice in those command decisions that are going to be made impacting us. So I think that's a real strength for us to be able to be a voice in those type of situations of a unified command and be sought out for our recommendations. So that's based on experience on what we bring to the table and who we are and years of working together. But probably a real missed opportunity in the past for people like me to say, let's ask the Harbor Safety Committee. We didn't have one. Mm-hmm. So now the captains can say, reach out to the Harbor Safety. I want to hear what your recommendation would be on this issue. And in a response mode, that's critical for both. One, they listen to us and they're concerned with what our opinions are. And two, there's a value added. We're actually coming to the table with something important. And it is very inclusive of all the users. So great asset for all the community in Alaska in this area.
And we talked about this, you know, throughout our conversation here. But you know, the Harbor Safety, the Cook Inlet Harbor Safety Committee has been around for 10 years, a decade. I'm curious, can we talk about some like tangible improvements to marine safety, environmental concerns within Cook Inlet since the founding?
Sure, proud to. I think I used one example already in the ICE guidelines, right? I think that's something that we've had a tremendous and immediate impact on, where in the past, the Coast Guard developed and wrote these, and it was all Coast Guard centric. And they were originally developed as a best practice for the users in response to a challenge that happened many years ago in ICE. And now it's completely morphed into the Harbor Safety Committee. And our navigation subcommittee is actually updating this every year. And we do a hot wash at the end of the year, and they're part of it, and say, what went right, what went wrong, what do we have to update the following year? Put this all together and we roll this into a recommendation to the captain of the port, and we're able to update that every year for the users. And this comes for a foreign ship coming in that has never been to Alaska, doesn't know anything about Cook Inlet, and is going to come up here in the winter. Now we have a document and a best practice that's developed by the Harbor Safety Committee that's going to go out to every one of these new ships coming up. And they're going to have an inspection by the Coast Guard in Homer. And every captain's going to go through a checklist that's in there on what they're going to have ready before they come up here and how the different equipment they're going to have and what they'll be, you know, available to do. And boy, what a great opportunity for this small Harbor Safety Committee to make this every year and improve on it and get this out. So there's immediate impact for improving safety coming up here. That's one I'd brag on.
Well, I think that is a great approach, and we do have processes in place to avoid, but we also have a long history of Cook Inlet maritime activities with some negative things have happened in the past. And since the formation and our increased involvement with the maritime community and the warnings we put out and the ICE guideline work, there has not been an incident since we've been formed of any substance whatsoever. That includes groundings, collisions, or significant oil spills. I mean, it's just one way to look at the outcome. We have outreach and methods of communication, and we regularly get people all into the same room that used to wait for an incident before they would gather. And now we talk about those things to avoid incidents in the future, and it's been successful. Every facility, terminal that passes hydrocarbons across the water has always had a facility response plan. And a lot of the same names are listed in the FRPs, right? But the requirements to gather and talk through these issues didn't exist before. This is voluntary. And voluntary seems, in my opinion, when someone's required to do something, they do it. But this is a very fruitful forum that has resulted in some better results because everyone that's on this board is voluntary. I don't know, maybe some of their employers force them to be on it, but it's a voluntary group that brings people together to talk about these issues in advance. And I will tell you that my 40 years on the water in Cook Inlet, I feel like we're operating a significantly higher standard than what occurred. It was kind of a by the grace of God before, and I think things have improved dramatically, partially because of the success of the Harbor Safety Committee.
And from what I understand, there's been sort of a push to get the word out about the Cook Inlet Harbor Safety Committee. This conversation is a small part of that push. Why has there been, I guess, a recent push for?
Because I think there are, I talked about the recreational boater publications when the boat went down and a family was lost recently in southern Cook Inlet. That should have resulted in everyone being safe and rescued. I started thinking about the smaller plans. We were heavily regulated on facility response plans. We have the interaction that's forced by the government. This volunteer group really is a perfect forum for helping to reach out. Alaskans don't like to be regulated, so if we can put out something voluntarily that helps share what you should have on your boat and what to do when things go wrong. The larger the boat, generally, the more systems have to fail before things get dicey. But we have a lot of people out there trolling for kings and 16-footers, which often is just one layer of something going wrong before you're in the water wishing you would have been better prepared. On every boat I have, I take a smaller boat with me. I have lots of survival gear. I have alternate ways of contacting people for help. I have alternate ways of telling people where I am, handheld GPSs and radios and things like that. I mean, for a few $100s, it could be the difference between your family surviving and your family not surviving. So that's why we're starting to get the word out a little wider to other users that may not necessarily be affected by the people in our group, although we have Garrett as our recreational boater person. I think I'm always looking for a way to be more effective, protect more people, make more people better prepared. And that's a way for us to move forward where we can improve our mission. It's obviously been successful with the group that we have, the large and very large to recreational boater interactions with commercial gear and things like that. But have we really reached out to every boater? And how do we get that word out to them on making that difference, which ultimately is the most likely tragedy we're going to see on our waterway?
So this is part of our goal, recent, Peter and I working together with the managing board, increasing awareness in the community that this committee exists. It's been the same group primarily since we've started. We really haven't grown substantially, but we're at that point now. I want to make sure that the public is aware. We're out there. And every meeting, we have an opportunity for members of the public to speak. And at the end of this, we have, you know, any member, anyone can sit in, listen to the whole meeting, and sign up. And then I'm going to, as the chair, address them. And now they're standing up, and they're going to talk to the full committee. And this is what my concern is. This is what we are concerned with or happy with or whatever it would be. And that's unique. And I think that's, and then we collectively will be able to answer their concerns. And they're hearing from all the different users, including regulators there at the table. And what a great opportunity. So my next meeting, our next meeting is in October. It's October 16th at UAA. It's up in Anchorage. And at the end of that meeting, we will have an open forum for the public to come and ask us questions and say, this is what I like to talk about. And not necessarily they don't have to join the committee and commit time to it, but know it's there. Know we have this committee out there, and you can be part of it as a person that works and enjoys Cook Inlet. And I wanted folks to know that. Know there's a website out there, CookInletHarborSafetyCommittee.org, and they can go on, and there's the different plans that are up there. And you know, just recently, the captain of the port put out a new message, and we post all of those. So they can go to one site and have, if the state puts out something or the Coast Guard puts out something, the Bureau puts out a safety concern, we put that all on that website, and folks can go into one that's, because it's for them. It's for the users of the Cook Inlet. And, you know, that's part of our push to make people aware that this does exist, and it's open for all of them. It's not just, you don't have to be necessarily a member of this committee. If they want to be a member, there's a lot of possibilities for that, and we'd love to have more membership, but you don't have to be. You can just be a member of the public that has an interest in you have a voice, and we're going to listen to you, and you're going to have a really unique entity to hear your concerns. And I think that's something I wanted to push, and Peter and I have been talking about this for quite some time, so thank you, Hunter, for giving us this opportunity. Appreciate that.
Yeah, and before we sort of close out the conversation, anything in store for the future of the Cook Inlet Harbor Safety Committee that either of you would like to kind of get on the air there? I'll start with you, Paul.
The next meeting, we meet twice a year, in the spring and in the fall. The next one's in October, and this year it's at UAA, and it's in the 16th of October. And please go on the website. There's information on that meeting and the cleanup, and go and come see us on the 16th.
And that is all for this episode of the Kenai Conversation. A special thank you to Peter Machicki and Paul Mailer for joining us. You can hear the Kenai Conversation every week on Wednesday at 10 a.m. and Saturday at 5 p.m. here on KDLL. Or you could find it on our website, kdll.org. I'm Hunter Morrison. Thanks for tuning in.